The following recording is copyright 2013, Diocese of Little Rock, all rights reserved. For more information, visit www.dolr.org.
If some of you end up going to college and end up taking some courses in psychology, there'll be one course called Psychology 101. And in that course, you'll learn that birth order influences how we see ourselves and is often a factor in sibling rivalry. Now, there are very many exceptions, but the usual pattern is for the oldest child to be the responsible one, the family policeman. And he's got two goals: to win his parents' approval and to dominate his other brothers and sisters. Keep them in line. The second child's two goals are to get his parents' attention, which is not necessarily the same thing as approval, and to get out from under the thumb of number one. And the other children have birth order issues as well. How do you parent children that diverse? There's only one way. You love them all unconditionally. Each one has his or her issues, but you love them all just the same. And notice that love is not necessarily approval of their behavior, which you may or may not like. Love is about their value to you as a person, regardless of their behavior. In today's gospel of the prodigal son, we have a story of birth order and sibling rivalry and unconditional love. True to form, the older son slaved on the farm to win his father's approval. Never disobeyed any of his orders. While number two did some really bad things. First, he asked for his inheritance early, symbolically telling his dad to drop dead. Okay? That's when you get your inheritance, when your parents die. Okay? Notice he didn't want his father. He wanted his money. And once this father transferred title to half of his land, half of his hard-earned property, the young man then sold it out from underneath his father. Okay? Took the money, skipped town, leaving no forwarding address. You know, that was half of the money that the father had planned on living on. Okay? But he takes the money and runs. And yet, despite this hurt and this insult, his father still loves him. His father still longs to have him back, safe and sound, no matter what. He doesn't want anything bad to happen to him. And once this young man hit bottom, having debased himself so thoroughly that even eating pig slop sounded good, he finally came to his senses. When he returned home, willing now to be his father's servant, because obviously he had no possessions anymore, willing to spend all the rest of his life making amends, the father ran out to greet him. In fact, you get the impression that it wasn't that the father just happened to be outside that day and happened to notice him. You get the impression that his father had been out there every day looking for him. And finally the day came when he saw him. And he ran out to meet him, forgave him everything, and threw a party to welcome home this son who had wished him dead and who had squandered half his property. The boy was back alive, and the father couldn't be more relieved. But the good older brother was not relieved. He felt defrauded and furious. He had slaved for years to win his father's approval. But read between the lines. This older son was self-serving too. He obeys because he wants to inherit the farm. His brother had already cashed in half of the property. And so this older brother naturally expects that all of the rest of the remaining estate will one day be his. So that finest robe that the father puts on the boy, younger son, that ring, those shoes, that fatted calf, that wine, and all the food of the welcome home party were all taken from what he, the older son, had stood to inherit. And he resented it. Notice that this loving father has two selfish sons on his hands. And so he now swallows hard and goes out to the field to reassure him that, yes, you'll get to keep the farm. He says, everything as I have is yours. But don't be so small. He's your brother. We know that the younger son did come to his senses because the story tells us so. We know that he did come home. But the story ends without us ever finding out whether the older son also came to his senses. We don't know what the older son is going to do. You and I begin every Mass acknowledging that we are sinners and that we are wayward sons and daughters of a loving Father who forgives us, indeed who is watching for us and wanting us to rush up to us when we come back. And he wants to throw a party for us. But in our case, the party he throws is not a fatted calf that is killed, but rather his own begotten son. Okay. The wine and food that the prodigal son was served is now changed into the body and blood of Jesus, which makes us blood brothers and sisters to each other. If you've received the Eucharist, you are now a blood brother and a blood sister to everyone else who also has that same blood in their veins, the blood of Jesus. We exchange a sign of peace and mutual acceptance prior to going to communion, which is the price of admission to this banquet of God's unconditional love. If we're unwilling to extend love to others, we're not ready to come to the banquet. Mass is not an awards banquet for the righteous. It is a hospital for wounded souls, often self-inflicted wounds, because many times the sins we commit hurt us even more than the other person that we might have sinned against. Okay? And thus, this is a place of healing for sinners. Whether our selfishness resembles the selfishness of the older son, or whether it resembles the selfishness of the younger son, or both. God is throwing a banquet, and he wants to see his church packed with returning prodigals, our brothers and sisters. And we have a choice: rejection or compassion. Okay? A choice that may well determine whether we get admitted to the banquet ourselves, the heavenly banquet. Because by the measure with which we measure, we will be measured.